Going Linux, episode 56, Computer America, number 10. I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is an internet audio program, a podcast, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows, or just thinking about going Linux, this audio program will provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use your Linux computer. Our goal is to help make the Linux experience easy for you.
Each month, we publish three episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions.
On the third Tuesday of each month, I appear live on the Computer America radio show. We post those episodes, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
Our user experience episodes appear near the end of each month. In them, we normally take 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts.
During month two, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for computer users building their confidence and competence with Linux. This is my 10th appearance on the Computer America radio show.
Broadcasting live, it's America's longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America Show. It's the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 20th of January, 2009, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And, of course, an auspicious day today, this being the inauguration of our 44th president. And I watched it, and I actually recorded it too, Kerry. I used my DVR to record it, so we can kind of watch it again. And some members of our family were in school; they didn't get the chance to see it, so that was kind of cool. So, and now I understand he's going to 10 different parties, balls in Washington, attending them, and and then he has to get up. He has to start first thing at 7:15 in the morning. So our new president's going to have a busy schedule. So. At least we get to sleep later. You know, we're up late too, right? But at least we can get to sleep late. I know you sleep late, and I do too. And
he's got a very big job ahead of him.
Yes.
And he's going to be having some late nights and early mornings for quite some time.
I think so. But that goes with the job, you know. There you go. But it was a terrific. I mean, it was amazing seeing over a million people in the mall there, you know. Someone told me there was a million people in our mall over here. I wouldn't go, you know. But the Washington Mall, just blanket, wall-to-wall people. I watched it on TV, and I have to tell you, it was just an impressive sight to see something like that. So, but anyway, here we go with our newest administration, and here we go with our first show, well, at least for me, my first show of the week. I know you were on last night.
Scott Mueller.
Scott Mueller, yeah.
We got into the geekiness.
That's right.
All the geeky goodness.
All the geeky goodness. Now, of course, this is the third Tuesday of the month, and as we do things the third Tuesday of the month, we dedicate the show to the Linux operating system because it continues to become more and more popular. And, of course, we talk about different things. Linux is right for you, and we talk from a beginner's point of view and from an intermediate point of view and even an advanced point of view. We dedicate the show to Linux because it's important. And if you have a Linux question, of course, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Now, joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome into Computer America.
Well, thanks. Thanks again for having me on. And since we haven't spoken since December, Happy New Year.
Yes, that's right. Happy New Year to you. That's right. Yes. New Year, and I keep bumping into people. That's just like, well, you know, I haven't seen you since last year, so Happy New Year. That goes on usually for about the first month, and then, you know, it's right up there with when you're writing out checks and you still put 08, you know, and you keep, yes. No, I got to do the 09. They kind of expect people going to do that for a while before they get it. It's
you
funny.
You still use checks?
Yeah, exactly. But you have to use checks. I was watching TV, and they were referring to the president, Obama, as president-elect. And he went, nope, I guess I can't call him that anymore. You know, it's the same. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. You know, you just got to be doing something for so long, and now you have to kind of change it over. So there's a little bit
you
of a change.
You get in the habit. It's hard to break.
That's true, right? And a good habit, hopefully, and at least people are beginning to make a good habit, is using Linux as it continues to become more and more popular. I think 2009 is going to show even more. Now, of course, the other big thing, you know, it's been easier for people to convert over to Linux because in many cases Windows Vista has sort of been the bad guy, I guess, in the sense that, you know, there's been a lot of negative press about it, and people were saying, okay, I think I'm going to go over to Linux. And I know a lot of adopters of the Linux operating system can attribute that going over to Linux because of the Vista platform. But now, mm-hmm. of course, we have Windows 7 on the horizon, which is promising to be more stable, better, and all the other things. And do you think that's going to affect the numbers of people going over to Linux, or do you think it's just it's something that won't even affect that? Or I mean, what's your feelings on that?
Well, certainly the bad press that Vista has gotten, justified or not, has opened people's eyes to the other opportunities that are out there for operating systems, including Linux, including Mac. And I think both of those platforms have benefited from that bad press. Now, Windows 7, it's beginning to get a little bit of good press. It's certainly, Microsoft is certainly saying the right things about it. There are some detractors who are saying, well, it's just Vista that's polished. It's the way Vista should have been in the beginning, and you could take that either way. I think the tide is going out. I think there are people who, because they are exposed to Linux now, and particularly because the computer manufacturers are moving more and more to Linux, like in the netbooks or as an embedded operating system, as a fast way to boot a system into a browser and maybe a lightweight word processor or something like that. I think people are becoming more and more aware of Linux, and I think the cage is open and the animal has escaped. I don't think that there's going to be a mass exodus from Linux back to Windows with Windows version 7, for example.
Are you saying that people are adopting Linux because it's quicker, faster to get into it, but for lightweight work, because you said kind of a lightweight word, and but for this quote-unquote serious work, we're going to stay with Windows?
No, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that from a computer manufacturer's perspective, where you see Linux pre-installed on computers that you can walk into a store like Best Buy or Circuit City, well, bad example. But
yeah, well, exactly, yeah.
Right, but Best Buy or you know, computer stores, and purchase a computer with Linux installed on it, you see them on the lighter weight computers, the netbooks that have slower processors and lower amounts of RAM and no CD-ROM and so on. And Linux is a perfect option for those because it doesn't require the super high-performance processor to run at a reasonable speed. And certainly that's a problem with Vista that Windows 7 is hoping to overcome. But Linux is there. Linux is out there. People are becoming aware of it. And even if they're not becoming aware of it by name, they know that, oh, this is a little bit different on this netbook, and kind of a funny-looking Windows, but it works great. Hmm. So I think there's some of that going on. And what I meant by lightweight and faster to boot and so on would be where computer manufacturers are using a ROM-based version of Linux, an embedded Linux, not a full distribution, but a ROM-based one that would when you turn on your computer, it boots in a matter of seconds, but it boots not to Windows, but to a version of Linux that just has a browser or just has a browser and a way to navigate and a menu that says start Windows now. And so it boots faster. You can begin using your computer faster so that if all you really want to do is surf the Internet and check your email online, you can do that without ever having to boot into Windows, shut down your computer, and you're done.
Yes, that's true. And that would be the quick and dirty version, as you're saying.
Yes, exactly. And computer manufacturers are beginning to include that as a fast way to boot these full-size computers.
Well, of course, conversely, Windows users will argue that if you want to, you can just put Windows either in hibernate or in sleep mode. So, you pick it up then, boom, and the moment you're back up and running momentarily. So you do have that, And
yes, that helps. But what in my personal experience running computers at work that run Windows, I find that, especially with all of the security software and all of the other stuff that the corporations put on there for security, it's so bogged down that with all that stuff that to start from scratch from a cold boot or to put it into hibernate or suspend mode, particularly hibernate, the boot time is imperceivably different. There's really no difference in the amount of time it takes to boot. Yeah, at least in my corporation, where we've got antivirus, anti-spyware, we've got some corporate VPN stuff on there, and it's painfully slow to begin with, but it's not any better to put it in hibernate.
Well, yeah. Well, my experience, because I don't have all those things running on my Windows machines. I mean, I've got an AVG antivirus. And of course the other thing is that when it comes about, it has to hook up with the wireless the Wi-Fi network. I have it running with Wi-Fi, so it has to do the hookup for that. But I will have to say that the process of getting up and running is, when it's in hibernate mode, is a lot faster than when I have to boot the entire system from scratch. That's been my experience. But again, I don't have all those other things that you're mentioning. Carrie, when you leave your systems on 24/7, but you rarely ever turn yours on.
Not all systems, just my main system.
Okay.
Other systems I turn on or off as needed.
Okay, so then what's your experience? Do you notice that? Well, first of all, you use the hibernate or sleep? I mean,
I use hibernate on the laptop that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any point in turning off the laptop. Just hibernate it, and it'll start up a little faster. I never ever use sleep. I will set the monitors to turn off on my main system, but I don't want my hard drives to spin down, and I don't want my main system, to go to sleep or to hibernate.
Okay.
I want the hard drives always spinning. I want higher reliability.
Difference between hibernate and sleep on Windows platform is what?
Well, sleep saves. What sleep is doing is it's basically putting the computer into a low power mode, but it's still on.
Okay.
All right. It's going to turn the hard drive off. It's going to turn the monitor off, and it's going to sort of.
Put it in a low power mode.
Right.
Yeah, you can shut the lid of the laptop. Let's use a laptop, for example, in sleep mode. And a good example of this would be, okay, I'm sitting at the airport. I'm waiting for my plane to start boarding, so I open my laptop and I start to work. They announce that the plane is beginning to board, so I put my laptop to sleep. And when I do that, the laptop very quickly puts itself into a simulated power off, but it's still got power running on it. Now, if I put the laptop up in the luggage compartment, above my head or whatever, below the seat, and I forget about it, when I get off the plane, my battery may have died. I may have lost everything I was working on. Maybe.
Because power is still being drawn.
Now, when I get back on the plane and I sit down and they say, okay, you're in your seat, you can use your laptop. I open up the laptop, boom, it very quickly goes right back to where I... Right where the cursor was in Word, everything's still there, everything's happy, and everything's good. Now, I'm at the hotel, and I'm going to go to bed, and I'm in the middle of writing an article, and I put the laptop into hibernate, and it takes a little longer than sleep mode, because what it does is it takes everything that's running, and it saves it as a file on the hard drive. The file is as big as the amount of RAM, if I'm correct, the amount of RAM that you have. So if you have 2 gigs of RAM,
you're saving the
you have a
2
gig hibernation file. and then it shuts the computer completely off. There's no battery or electric power being used whatsoever. So that process takes a little longer to turn off, takes a little longer to start up, but it's still faster than doing a complete reboot. When I go to use the laptop tomorrow, when I wake up in the morning, I open it up, and it resumes from hibernation. It puts my cursor right back into that Word document.
All right, listen, the music means we're going to take a break. We'll continue on with our All Linux show for tonight with Larry Bushy. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. If you want to join us, you certainly can, toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's the number that'll get you on and get you through. That's 866-606-8255. Or you can send us an email to live, that's L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com. If you have a question for myself, Carrie, or Larry, but you don't want to go on the air, that's a great way to get your question asked. You can also go into our chat room. The way that works is you go to the Computer America homepage. Over there on the left side, you'll see it says chat with us. You pick a username. That's the name you'll be known by when you go into the chat room. Click the join button in your Java-enabled browser, be on a Windows machine, Mac, Linux, you know, Vista. It all works. We'll move you into the Computer America chat room where our guest this hour and next is participating, Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And we are right now talking about Linux for all both hours. And just before the break, I had asked Kerry to kind of define what the difference is between hibernate and sleep, the two different modes on a computer. Hibernate being one that it shuts down and draws no power whatsoever. It saves the state of the computer to the hard disk and then comes back on. It takes a little bit longer. Sleep mode is that it powers down most of the electrical devices but maintains current running into it. So when you turn it back on, the screen comes back on, your hard drive spins up, and things are you're back to operation more quickly.
Your session is saved in RAM in sleep mode, and your session is saved to the hard drive in hibernation mode.
Right, exactly. And then there are pluses and minuses for both depending upon what it is you want to do. The nice thing
but
is
really,
that you,
really
you have
no
a choice.
Advantage to a desktop, mostly for laptop. Anybody who uses it on a desktop, I just think it's silly.
Well, because you don't because battery conservation really isn't an issue with a desktop. That's what's an issue.
Well, some people say I like to use it on my desktop because it comes on a lot faster in the morning. But it's like, you know, computers come on so fast nowadays. I don't get that. You know?
Yeah, that's true. And I just want to say that for people who aren't familiar with Linux, Linux has exactly the same features for a laptop computer. There's a sleep mode and a suspend mode, and it's called exactly the same thing. Works in exactly the same way. If you put it in sleep, it essentially cuts the power to the display, which is probably the biggest power sucker of the whole thing, it spins down the hard drive and so on, and reduces the power. And Hibernate actually takes what's in RAM, saves it, as Kerry said, to a file on the hard drive, and powers down the computer. And then when you press the power button on again, when you're in Hibernate mode, it copies all that was in that file back into RAM, and you're back up and running.
And, you know, we say that so lightly. That's not an easy thing to do, given all the pointers and things that have to be made sure that they're all pointing back to the same place. That's why I know for a while, or for a long time, Hibernate really didn't work very well.
A lot of driver, usually video driver issues, and being connected back to your network were problems with resuming from hibernation.
Right. It seems to be that most of that is pretty much been resolved, can be fairly confident that when you're back, when you resume the work that you're doing, everything is going to be working the way it's supposed to. Technology marches on.
You know, there was an article, speaking of netbooks, in USA Today. I had to bring my car in for an oil change, and they had the paper laying there, and they had an interesting article on netbooks that the manufacturers they don't know what to do. They don't know if this is a fad or if. And they're worried because if everybody starts buying these netbooks, there's no margin to be made on them. And they feel the customers may have an unfair, I don't know, expectation of what to get out of a computer for how much money. And they're saying basically the computer makers ship 9.9 million netbooks, making it one of the hottest consumer electronic products of the year. According to IDC, 6.7 million units went to the nations in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, 1.4 million to Asia and the Pacific, and 950,000 to the USA. And they say that, well, some netbooks hold limited appeal for home users and none for business users. They said these things are not designed for people to use for long periods of time. Still, low price could help them catch on as a second PC in many households, especially those with Wi-Fi home networks. And Dell for now suggests business users stick with full-size laptops. And HP last fall introduced a Vivian team designer model, pitching netbooks as a fashion statement. What's your view on these netbooks, Larry?
Well, you know, I think the netbooks are... I'm not sure that they're a fad. It's taken them a long time to take off. I remember years ago I used to have a Toshiba Libretto, which was about the size of about half the size of a keyboard. The whole
yeah, but
thing.
That wasn't a netbook by any means. That was a fully functioning, you know, miniaturized.
Yes, and they've taken off since then through UMPCs to today's netbooks.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's pick this up on the other side, because that music means we've got to take a break. But they're saying, you know, the netbooks were just introduced by Asus in 2007. So according to this, they didn't take long to take off. But we'll discuss more of that in detail when we return. More Computer America right after.
Thirty-four minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. This hour and the next, we're dedicating to Linux. Before we get back to that and the subject of netbooks, I just want to let all of you know that, of course, our Computer America contest is in full swing right now. And certainly we're giving away not one, not two, but three, four, but five terrific prizes. And actually, you can double that to 10 because I'll explain that. We have five great prizes we're awarding this month. They're all from Logitech. And along with each of the prizes we're giving away, we're including a copy of System Mechanic from Iolo Technologies, the PC tune-up experts. And you can check them out at www.iolo, that's IOLO.com. And you can get any of Iolo's products directly from CompUSA.com. Now, to enter the contest, just go to ComputerAmerica.com. You'll see the big blue banner there. It's hard. You cannot miss it. And it's even more prominent than Carrie's picture on the homepage. And you just click on the Launcher Computer America contest page. And
that's a violation of my contract.
And then it says... Now, we've had to – a lot of yours – it says to enter, send an email to contest@computeramerica.com, but a number of you have forgotten to put your name, address, and telephone number. So we're reemphasizing it on the contest page that valid entries must include your full name, address, and phone number, and then send an email that includes that information to contest@computeramerica.com. The contest ends Friday, February 20th, 2009, and then the winners will be announced on Tuesday, February 24th. 2009. We got five touring prizes like the Harmony One. That's our grand prize. That's the Advanced Universal Remote from Logitech that was just unveiled at CES. A killer G19 keyboard, gaming keyboard from Logitech that has the LCD display, voice over IP communications data, and all the stuff built into the keyboard. A DeNovo keyboard, Quick Cam video cameras, and also the PureFly Express, which is the iPhone, iPod music docking station. Beautiful system. You can see pictures of all of them right there at ComputerAmerica.com. Just get over there, enter in the contest to win. So that is it. It's going on. And so what's this now with netbooks that you were asking about, Kerry, before the break?
Just curious what Larry's view of them are. Is. Are.
What the view is.
Well, I is real impressed.
I is too.
What I was saying before the break is the netbooks have taken on various personas since back in the day when I used a Libretto, and when I started podcasting in 2005. The UMPC was coming on the radar for folks, and it was kind of the next generation of tiny PCs, underpowered PCs, and I don't think they had quite the right form factor and the right operating system to make them successful. But as these computer manufacturers began to experiment a little bit further, they came up with beef up a PDA, which is kind of the UMPC approach, they started to think about, well, let's scale down a full-size laptop, and that's what made it successful. That, and I think the ability for these manufacturers to put Linux on the computer. Now, you were talking about the margins on these laptops, and, you know, whether it's a netbook or a full-size notebook, there's not a lot of margin on any of them, quite frankly.
Well, according to the article, according to this article, but I have a link there posted in the chat room, the major vendors are quite worried because they're saying that the margin on these netbooks is slimmer, much slimmer, than it is on a laptop. And they're concerned that they don't know how much. I guess they're trying to figure out what point it's going to have or how big of a deal it's going to be if this is a rush of people getting them and playing with them and then realizing, well, it's not going to do what I need it to do. Or is this a rush that's going to continue as people buy them and say, hey, this is great, we want to get more?
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty interesting article and one I hadn't really considered before. And like I said, I've got the link in the chat room. I'll put it in the show notes as well. And,
great.
Of course, that music means it's a 60-second break. We got a much bigger segment here coming up. We'll discuss this in more detail. And we're back with the Computer America Show. We are live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. It's the All Linux Show. We're talking with Larry Bushy of the Going Linux podcast. And, of course, we're talking about these netbooks because they all ship, the majority of them, ship with a version of Linux. And, you know, the key thing here, according to this article, the big dilemma is that big tech suppliers remain heavily reliant on sales of high-powered, high-priced laptops to drive profits. Profit margins are razor-thin on netbooks, and shipping millions of cheap PCs could drive down consumers' expectations of what they should spend for a basic computer.
Yeah, and I think that There's a lot to be said for that, and the razor-thin margins on the netbooks in particular may be in part what's driving the computer manufacturers to use Linux on the as the operating system. Since Linux is a no-charge operating system, it is less expensive than including a license of Windows on there. Now, what the computer manufacturers pay for a license of Windows is a very small fraction of what the average consumer would pay if they walked into a computer software store and picked up a box, a full license version of Vista at $300 or $400. But still, every little bit helps when you're talking about razor thin margins. So I'm sure that a book that I wasn't reading but I was hearing about on another podcast was mentioning the open source software, of which Linux is one example, is probably the biggest threat to the future of the Windows operating system. And I had the book that I'm referring to is one by Keith Curtis. It's called After the Software Wars. I had heard that particular book discussed and that quote discussed by Paul Thurrott, who is on the Windows Weekly podcast, and he also manages the super site for Windows. I'm sure that you folks, being a technology radio program yourself, are familiar with Paul Thurrott.
Of course. He was
mentioning this book and mentioned that, as the quote directly from the book is, directly from Paul's comment on the Windows Weekly podcast site is, After the Software Wars is a book which states that open source software, not Apple, is the real future competition to the Windows operating system. And I think netbooks is helping to put a little nail in that coffin. Not that I think Windows is going away anytime soon, but it's going to be losing market share to both Linux and Mac and perhaps other operating systems that Linux has helped put the foot in the door for.
Now I have I have an Asus the EEE PC 900, and I put Windows XP on it, and it just runs so poorly, so slowly. I ended up putting Linux back on it, and it runs, you know, just fine with Linux on it. But what I can do with it with Linux on it is basically, and partially because of my ignorance of Linux, is, you know, go on the web, connect to the Wi-Fi, go on the web, check the email, and that's about it. And it does that quite well. But as soon as I start wanting it to do something of substance, I feel like I'm using a computer that's 10 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Just curious, did you put the did you use the restore disk to put the original version of Linux back on there, or did you try some
yes.
of the other? Okay.
Well, there yeah, I used. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say I used Acronis Trimage to make an image of the factory installation.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I installed Windows XP and I got it all configured, I made an image of it as well, and then put the Linux back on it again, just in case I get frustrated with the Linux, I can throw the Windows
sure.
XP back on. I don't know what I'm doing with this thing. I mean, everybody say, "Oh, this is the latest and greatest thing. You got to get one of these, Carrie." And I got it, and I'm like, "Gosh, you know,
yeah.
what am I going to do with it?" I mean, the yeah. best thing I could think of to do with it right now is to throw Windows XP on it, so I can run the software that we've got that does our you know, the music that plays at 30 seconds before the break and the other audio cues that we have. Mm-hmm. Instead of running it on my main PC, that way you don't hear the bleeps and the blips of incoming mail and errors and things like that on my computer while I'm live on the radio. And this
right.
thing is small and unobtrusive, out of the way, stick it in a corner somewhere. Who cares how long it takes to boot? You know, there's plenty of time before the show starts to get it booted up. Throw the audio output out to the mixer and have its sole purpose be a very inexpensive soundboard.
Right, and I think the average user, I don't think any of us here on the program are average users of any sort of computer, but I think the average user of a netbook would be someone who either A, is not a very savvy computer user who just wants something to check their mail, or it is somebody who has a desktop computer or a desktop replacement laptop at home or at the office and needs something that they can take with them for a short business trip, an overnighter or something like that, where they still need to be able to communicate with the office and with people at the office, but don't want to take and don't need to take a full-fledged computer with them because it's just a short trip and they really just need an email machine. And today's PDAs, even the iPhone, have some limitations when it comes to large attachments on emails and things like that. So a full-fledged computer, even in a small package, can handle that. And Linux can handle that just as easily as it can as a computer can that is running Windows. So a netbook is a perfect quick overnight business trip machine.
Or I guess if you have a teenager or a kid at home that likes to do a lot of text messaging and they're just tying up the computer, texting back and forth, it seemed
not
like that would be
example,
a good example of that, and not having to worry about it getting infected with the latest thing of you know, whatever the latest virus or worm is that's going around or passed around through the instant messaging. But
sure. And I hear a lot of folks who are Linux proficient who have purchased the Triple EPC or the equivalent netbook out there, and they thought they were going to use it more than they actually do. And it's not because they don't know how to use Linux. It's because it doesn't have the speed, it doesn't have the power, it doesn't have the capability that they've become used to on a full-size laptop. And, you know, there are certainly some limitations to these machines, and maybe that makes it a fad. Maybe it hasn't found its niche yet, but only time will tell, quite frankly.
Well, you mentioned that there's an HP, the Mini Me.
Yes. HP has introduced something called a Mini Me, strange name, but it is Linux-based. It has Ubuntu on it, and the reason I brought this one up, and we'll include links to the article on the show notes, but interestingly, and I was looking for your feedback as to what you thought about this, they have installed standard Ubuntu on it, but they've disabled the command line. So what that means is that the Linux expert who uses the command line routinely or who grew up using the command line before there was a graphical user interface won't be able to use this. Well, quite frankly, they would just wipe off the existing installation
right.
and install a full
yeah.
installation if they really wanted to. But it's really, I'm getting the feeling that HP has designed this for a machine that they can promote to promote the adoption of Linux among computer users who really don't have any use for the Windows DOS prompt or the command prompt, or have no interest in even learning the Linux command line. What do you think? Do you think that's a good assessment?
I think that you have hit the nail on the head, that the people who want that will install their own.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who don't know what it is won't miss it, the fact that it's not there, and it'll give them one less opportunity to screw the machine up getting into something that's way over their head. Now, granted, that's how I learned, getting it over my head and getting myself
sure.
in trouble.
I think most.
But there seems to be less and less tolerance for that, because I only use the computer to connect the bulletin board system, so what was my inconvenience? But when we're talking about being able to get work done in business, productivity is the key of why people have computers today. So that learning curve of the hard knocks isn't as acceptable, not as an acceptable means of learning like it used to be for the majority of people out there that have these computers. So I understand that. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's no different. Dell blocks out a lot of options in their BIOS. Listen, we're going to take another break. We've got much more coming up.
Oh,
stay
yeah.
with us.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. Jeff Stark running our show tonight at the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy is our guest tonight. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And, hey, Larry, I know we asked this at the top of each at the end of each hour. If people want to hear more about your podcast, where do they go to hear it?
Well, if you subscribe to iTunes, you can find us in iTunes. Just search for Going Linux, or search on my name, Larry Bushy, and you'll find us there as well. You can also find us on our website at goinglinux.com. You can listen to the podcast episodes right there on the website with a flash player installed in your browser, or you can download the episodes one at a time, or you can subscribe to them either in iTunes or any other podcast receiving software that you may have, including such Linux software programs as Rhythmbox and Amarok.
Ah, okay. Wasn't that on the top 10? I don't know. Exactly. So when we come back, you know, in the next hour, we're going to continue on. I also know that you have emails, people who've asked you questions, and we're going to be talking or addressing some of those questions as well. You get questions that they hear about what goes on the show here. They hear you on the show. I know they ask questions because they know they're going to hear the answers. So that's some of the things that we'll be doing there as well. So that's all coming up in the next hour of the program. And again, if you want to join us, you certainly can. Toll free 866-606-8255. I don't get that number up enough. People say, I just missed the number, and that's why I don't call. It's 866-606-8255. That number will get you on and get you through. So if you have a question about Linux, it could be a beginning question, intermediate, or, you know, I guess, Larry, an advanced question. We certainly are here to answer those questions for you here at the Computer America Show, of course, or you can email us at live@computeramerica.com, or join us in our chat room at the computeramerica.com website. Lots of people in there. Larry's in there participating, and certainly a lot of fun. Just want to also congratulate our this week's Buddy List winner. I know, Carrie, you announced him last night, David Lines. David Lines wins the Logitech Wave keyboard, and also he gets a copy of PC Tools Internet Security Suite. That's a PC Tools all-in-one security suite featuring the award-winning anti-spyware, antivirus, firewall, and spam protection. And also, when we get a call, an email, a feedback, or chat room visit from someone who's outside of North America, that person gets a copy of PC Tools' latest version of Spyware Doctor. So we have lots of cool things to award. Now, the only thing is that if you leave us a voicemail, we will award you a prize too, a copy of PC Tools' version of Spyware Doctor if you're outside of North America, but you have to leave us in that voicemail your email address. We won't put your email address on the air, but you do need to let us know what your email address is so we can forward a copy of that PC Tools prize to you. Let's see. Well, okay, now coming up in the next hour, Larry, what are some of the topics that we're going to touch upon?
Oh, we have lots of things we can talk about. There's a couple of distributions of Linux we can talk about, including Super Ubuntu. There's a version of Linux that you can run on your Windows computer.
Oh.
And we can answer some questions from listeners who have written into us.
And how about this 12 reasons why Linux is better than Windows for non-techies?
I think it says Windows is better than Linux. We'll talk about
that. Linux is better than Windows for non-techies. That's exactly. I got the little reverse there. Hey, it's a dyslexic evening for me, but I'm KO now. This is the Computer America Show. Lots more coming up. We'll be right back after your local and national news. Stay tuned for another hour
of
Computer America.
Callers and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Broadcasting live, it's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And we continue on with our third Tuesday of the month show, which is dedicated to the topic of Linux. Larry Bushy continues on with us. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And we're going to kind of approach this. Now again, we're going to be talking about different things and different topics. We're going to be talking about some things like, for example, 12 reasons why Linux is better than Windows for non-techies. But if you want to get in on the conversation, you certainly can. We have open phone lines, toll-free, 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255. That'll get you on to get you through. Email us to live@computeramerica.com or our chat room at computeramerica.com. All accessible to you. Have any questions about Linux. So, Larry, what are some of the reasons why Linux is better than Windows for non-techies? Yes.
Well, you
got 12 of them. Yeah.
Yeah, there are 12 of them, and
now we could do that to the song, the 12 days of, you know, why Linux. No, but I don't think that was going to work.
Yeah, I don't
No.
I don't know how good you are at singing, but I don't think we'd have very much of a listening audience if I was I have a link to an article that we'll put in the show notes that actually has it the other way around. It is 12 reasons why Windows is better than Linux for non-techies. And I'd like to kind of go down as many of those as we have time for and talk about them, because there's some validity to some of them. I think there can be an argument made on the other side of many of them as well. So this is on the Bablotech blog site, and like I said, we'll have a link in the show notes to that site. But the first one is, and by the way, they have a comic illustration of Homer Simpson saying, "Linux is not for geeks. Who is Dell? What's the meaning?" So it kind of gives you an idea that this might be a little tongue-in-cheek, but at any rate, the first reason is which distro to use. And the author of the blog site says, as all of us know, Linux has got tons of distros, and this is the first confusing point for non-techies, that which distro is best for them. Now, I don't think the author of this site, English is his first language, so I'm going to be stumbling over some of these.
Okay.
But the plethora of distributions can definitely be confusing to somebody who's interested in converting to Linux. And that is why podcasts like the Going Linux podcasts, sites like goinglinux.com, and the various other help sites that are out there for helping computer users to move over to Linux are so valuable is because we provide, as a Linux community, a lot of guidance to people who are trying to switch over. And some of the guidance that I give to new Linux users who may not be all that computer savvy to begin with, somebody who wants to use a computer as an appliance rather than as a technological wonder to learn about, I recommend that they start with something that is newbie-friendly, like Ubuntu, like Linux Mint, and like this new distribution that's just been released over the past couple of months called Super Ubuntu. It is a version of Ubuntu that has all of the restricted software, and I'll define that in a moment, pre-installed, so that you don't end up having to install Ubuntu and then find out that, oh, wait a minute, Flash isn't installed. How do I get Flash? I got to go in and install that. Oh, Java's not installed. I've got to go get Java. How do I do that? And with Ubuntu, although it's newbie-friendly, the folks at Canonical, the good folks at Canonical, are trying not to install restricted software. And by restricted, what I mean is software that is, has some sort of license agreement that prevents its free distribution, or has some sort of proprietary nature to it. And Sun's Java has traditionally been one of those software packages that has not been free and open source. And there are many other audio and video codecs that fall into that category as well. And in order to try to stay as true to free and open source philosophy as possible, Canonical doesn't install those. Well, this Super Ubuntu takes the Ubuntu distribution and installs all of that up front for you, puts it on the ISO CD so that you can create your own CD and install it just like you can with Ubuntu. And you have Ubuntu, but you have all of that proprietary software installed that makes it usable for the average user who is switching from Windows and has Flash pre-installed and has Java pre-installed and has the ability to burn CDs and burn DVDs and play MP3 files and all of those things that you can't do with Ubuntu out of the box unless you figure out how to install software. Now, all of it's free, all of it's easily installed, all of it's freely available. It's just that for a new user with faced with a new user interface that is Linux, even though some distributions make it very difficult to tell the difference between Linux and Windows when you're using it, there are still some differences, like installing software. You don't go to the store and purchase a $20 to $400 software package, insert the CD, and install it. You just go on the package manager. Packages are what the Linux community calls software. You just go on the package manager. You find the software that you want to install, and you install it. You don't have to pay for it.
You do that by downloading it first?
Yes, typically that's how it's done. Is in fact, when you open the package manager, you there's a little search button there. You click on it. You type in what you want to search for, either by the name of the program or by what it is you want to what you want to do. So if you want to have a drawing program, you can search for the word drawing, and it'll list a whole raft of software programs that are available for you to do drawing. And you just check the one you want. Hit apply, and it will download and install it for you.
So much of us are used to another platform going into either a computer store, brick and mortar store, and shopping, or going into and looking and saying, oh, this is the product. When you take the box, you go to the register, you buy the box, and you take it home, and then there's a CD, as you say, you install it, and you put in the product code to make sure, then the serial number and everything, so it's, and then it goes through the installation process. Some of us are used to, sometimes, of course, you can go online, you can go to the software publisher's website and download the application, and then after downloading it, do a purchase with a credit card over that, and you get the serial number, or you get a trial period for that, so you do that too. You got to sort of get out of that mindset when you're working with Linux, huh?
You do. it's not as much effort. First of all, you don't have to go to the brick-and-mortar store. Secondly, even if you do download it, if it's not something that's in the software repository that is the package manager, typically you can find not an .exe file as you do in Windows that you download and install, but it's, depending on your distribution, it's either a .deb file, if it's a Debian distribution, or an .rpm file, which is the Red Hat type distributions, and you can install those with a right-click install as well, and it runs exactly the same way in most distributions as it would in Windows to install something. You just right-click on the file and choose install, and it goes through the installation process, and you're up and running with it.
And no, and no licensing information, no licensing fees, no serial numbers to type in, none of that
exactly.
stuff.
It's a lot easier to do, and and the other nice thing is, after installing the software, you don't have to reboot.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, it depends. Not all of them on Windows, nor of course something else on the
You're
Mac
right.
platform require you to do that. But and quite frankly, I always extend a kudos and a blessing to every publisher who does that. So
because
it always makes me nervous. When I have to reboot, or I have to type in a system password because on the Mac side, because it's got to go way down in there and do some strange things. I just love it. I can drag and drop it, excuse me, and then it's installed, and I just continue to work. That's really nice. And you're saying that's pretty much the status quo for Linux installations for
exactly
application
right.
software installations in the Linux environment.
That's exactly right. And once you've installed it, the only time you have to reboot is when you update the kernel, which is the basic operating system itself. So if you've got a major revision to the operating system, I'm not talking about security updates or tweaks or anything like that. All of that happens without rebooting. But if you change the operating system, change the kernel, it'll still run on the old kernel until you reboot. So if you want to use what you just installed, you have to reboot.
Well, sometimes Windows will say, you don't have to reboot. You can reboot later, but I prefer you to start. And then, of course, on the Mac platform, it'll say, if it is one of those things where you have to reboot, it'll say, you really need to either log out and log back in. That's the more benign version of it. And I've never really been comfortable with that. Or then it says, no, you need to, after this install, you will need to reboot. Like, for example, if I do an installation of QuickTime on there, the 99.99 times out of 100, I've got to reboot my system.
Right.
But as I said, there are many applications where it installs, and I go, oh, look at that. I don't have to reboot. I can just continue on. It's nice. And so to have that as being more of the status quo in the Linux environment, that's got to be worth its weight in gold right there. Because
exactly.
Because I get nervous, Larry, when something messes around with the kernel, of the system. I mean, that means, oh, man, why are you down? And so, the whole idea behind a quote-unquote modern operating system is that the applications, no matter, they work in protected memory. They can't access the underpinnings of the operating system. There's no way for them to do that. And so even if the application blows up completely, it might stop running, but the computer software, the operating system, still continues to run. That's the way it's supposed to be. So every time I have to reboot, I'm going, well, what are they doing? They're playing with some of the underpinnings, or they're getting down there. So that always makes me nervous when I have to do that.
Yes, and I think that perhaps Kerry can comment on this better than you or I can, Craig, but I think that part of the reason why the Mac and Linux don't have to reboot when you install software is because of the way the operating system is structured. The Windows software typically is going to use more of those system calls or get down into the operating system, actually interact with the operating system, whereas Linux, those programs don't rely on that system-level programming to make it work.
Kerry, any comments? I don't know where to put the break.
Well, wouldn't you have to reboot after you install security software on any other platform? I think that's just inherent.
No, not with Linux.
Not on the Mac either. Yeah. Hey, we're gonna break. We'll come back and we'll continue on with this. This is the Computer America Show. Stay with us.
You're listening to Computer America, the official computer radio talk show of CompUSA.
24 minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. live@computeramerica.com, the email address, or our chat room at computeramerica.com. Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, joins us in this hour, both hours of the show dedicated to the Linux operating system. Just before the break, Larry and I were kind of asking Carrie, kind of scratching our heads, because for the most part, I know on the Mac, and evidently also, even more so on Linux, rarely do you have to reboot the system after an application installed. Now, there are some exceptions. I will note also, usually security software upgrades that come by Mac do not require a system reboot. They install, and then you just you work on your merry way. That's not to say that that doesn't happen sometimes. Sometimes it does, but for the most part, you don't have to do a reboot. Now, things like I mentioned QuickTime. QuickTime is actually an integrated part of the operating system, so much so that even the way the Mac displays the desktop, it uses QuickTime to do it. And don't ask me why, but it does. It's part of the core of the graphic system. So whenever I get an update to QuickTime, I know I'm going to have to do a reboot. But when I get, let's say, iTunes, which is also kind of, I don't reboot the system. You rarely have to do a reboot on the Mac, and evidently so even less on the Linux system. But with Windows, evidently, because and I can't speak from experience, but the few things that I have installed, I do realize that I have to reboot the system. And I guess maybe I'm so used to doing it the other way that I didn't realize that this was actually the exception to the rule rather than being the rule itself. Carrie?
Well, I can just tell you from experience the way the operating system works is there are files and directories, registry entries and whatnot that will not be removed until the system is rebooted. They'll always be in memory. The only way you can clear them out of memory is to restart the system. So particularly when you're dealing with operating system updates and with anything dealing with security, that's primarily when the system needs to be rebooted. Also, say, for example, you're updating drivers to your motherboard chipset, it's important the system gets rebooted so that the current drivers in memory are taken out and the new drivers are then loaded any possibility of conflicting with the previous ones.
Well, Larry said, and it's true also, that operating system upgrades, no question about it. You got to reboot the system. When you get an OS upgrade, you go, that's the kernel, that gets upgraded.
But
and
the security software, Windows is attacked in so many different ways that the Mac and Linux are not currently being attacked.
True.
That I believe that these security updates, even from third-party security software, has to inherently, in the same sort of mindset, has to be loaded fresh and clean in order to protect, to unload the previous security software, to reload it properly, to make sure that you are properly protected. And that's why many updates to security software, not just virus definitions, but actual updates to the engine itself do require reboot because it is so inherent into the operating system. And it's my understanding that that is, you know, I'm surprised to hear that there's so many occasions where you do not need to reboot on the Mac or on a Linux platform, because I'm just, you know, that's something that just comes
with the
territory of a Windows machine. But I've got to tell you something, honestly, I kind of feel like this is mountains out of molehills here, because how big of a deal is a reboot anyway?
Not much, no.
Well, and, you know, as a Windows user myself at work, even if software doesn't ask me to reboot, I've gotten into the habit of rebooting anyway, just in case. You know, and I think a lot of people do that.
And also, maybe sometimes you get a feeling that it's a refresh. Now, I don't reboot my system really, but sometimes I'll just say, you know, it's time. I haven't rebooted for like, you know, a month or something. You know, maybe it's time to clear out whatever's in there. And I'll just do a reboot just for the sake of doing a reboot. And I don't know if it's really necessary or whatever, but I just do it and I find that not necessarily things work faster or better or whatever, but I think it's just maybe it's just for my own good feeling. Okay, I just did a reboot. Whatever detritus has been building up there for a while, and you know, well, it clears it out. Even my iPhone, you know, I will actually reboot my iPhone. I mean, once in a rare while, it will lock up if it does, and I think it's only done it like maybe once or twice since I've had it in all the years. Or the time that I've had it, but the point is, once in a while, even the undercurrent is, if you're having a problem, it's not a bad idea just to reboot the system, just to get all the junk out of there and just, you know, kind of start fresh. So
and I think that's one of the advantages of Linux, is that even if, let's say, you've got a new version of the driver for your display, you know, your video driver, you don't have to reboot. All you have to do is restart the display. There is a program called X, just the letter X that runs the display in Unix systems, and the graphical user interface, that is. And to restart the display without having to reboot your computer, you press Control-Alt-Backspace, and the screen goes to black. You're presented with the login screen, and you log back in again. And it's not a simple log-off. All it's really doing is just shutting down the display driver and all of the software that runs it and restarts it again. And, of course, doing that, you need to put in your username and password again. But you're not rebooting the whole machine from scratch. It just takes literally a fraction of a second to do that.
Mm, okay. Well, and I think Carrie's right. I think maybe we're just – it's sort of a mountain out of a mole. I know it was a casual aside thing. Said, no, and by the way, I don't have to reboot, you know, but I kind of picked up on that, and I said, you know.
Well, it is for the home user. It is more of a curiosity and just a kind of a minor convenience. But think about the productivity lost by those folks in a corporation who every Tuesday receive the Microsoft updates over the network. It's pushed to them by the IT department, and they, right in the middle of their work, they have to reboot.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to continue on with this our All Linux show this hour. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. We got a caller from Boston. We'll take his call when we get back. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy continues on with us on our All Linux show tonight. Stay with us. And you're listening to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Let's go to Paul, who's listening to us on our radio affiliate WBNW AM 1120 in Boston. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hey, Paul.
Hey, thanks,
show.
Guys.
What's
really
up?
Really appreciate you taking my call. It's a great show.
Thank you.
You know, I'm sort of a hacker myself, software engineer. I manage a performance team, and you know, Linux is hands down a screaming operating system in comparison to Windows. One of the things that I was trying to install it on a laptop at home, and I'm not to the point where I understand the technology to pull in the drivers that I need. Have they come up with a mechanism for pulling in proprietary drivers like network drivers or, you know, special keyboards? That seems to be a problem with Windows and obviously with Linux. Have they come up with a better solution for that?
Well, first I need to know what distribution of Linux you're using.
Yeah, I just grabbed a Ubuntu version.
Right.
And I have this Atheros network driver, so it, you know, basically that was the end of that. Now I'm kind of stuck with a dead machine. Yeah.
Well, you know, Ubuntu has done an excellent job of, although they don't install the proprietary drivers by default, they have made them very easy to get, or relatively easy to get. And it is a matter of enabling the repositories that have them. And the way you go about doing that, and it's similar in some other distributions as well. This is not just an Ubuntu thing, but the instructions I'm about to give are specific to Ubuntu, but they'll apply to just about any distribution using the GNOME desktop manager.
Okay.
So if you go to the system menu in Ubuntu, go to administration and then to the Synaptic Package Manager, or alternately, you could click right on the software sources right there, right above Synaptic Package Manager, and get to where I'm taking you. But if you've clicked on Synaptic Package Manager, you go to Settings, and then Repositories is right there. Now, in the latest version, the last couple of versions of Ubuntu, they have made this even easier than the previous versions in that there are several tabs that come up, and the second one in is third-party software, and you just click to enable the partner repository, and also on the Ubuntu software, there are community-maintained universe and software restricted by copyright or legal issues, multiverse, those checkboxes. If you check those, then click close and then reload. It'll make all of those restricted drivers and other software available to you through the package manager, so you can install them right there.
Hey, Paul,
excellent. Thanks, guys. That's
hey,
great.
Listen, thanks for calling us, and make sure you enter into the contest at ComputerAmerica.com. Okay, Paul?
Will do.
All right, take care. Thanks for listening. All right, we got lots more coming up. We're just going to break for 60 seconds, and we'll continue on with Larry Bushy, which is all about Linux tonight. Don't go anywhere.
America Show live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. It's all Linux, the entire show, as we do each and every third Tuesday of the month, talking with Larry Bushy, founder, creator, host of the Going Linux podcast. If you want to learn more about Linux, of course, you can visit the Going Linux website, download all their shows. How many shows are you up to now, Larry?
Of Computer America that we will include will be episode number 56.
56. So if you're really interested in learning more about Linux, you can always go there at your convenience and download these previous shows, and as well,
that's right,
continue on into the future shows as well, and of course participation, as is here, is welcome there as well. If you have questions, it's a great place to go. Speaking of which, did you bring some questions with you?
I did indeed. We have some email messages that have been sent in by listeners to both Computer America and to the Going Linux podcast. One that is from Computer America listener Tony from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, who sent an email in. I think it was to you, Carrie, or at least you forwarded it on to me. He followed up with me on another topic. He had had trouble getting into the chat room on Linux before Christmas, but he also followed up with another problem he had. Actually, he said, I'm into weather big time. And he said, so I found this cool website over the web. It's called wxnation.com/supersites, and it's a weather site. I went on there. He says, it doesn't want to work under Linux. Can you help? All the best, Tony from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. I went back and forth with Tony, getting a little bit more information about what works on the site and what doesn't. It turns out that only one of the various weather stations that this thing linked to wasn't working, and it was one that used Java. The Java, I think, is exactly the same problem that he had when he was trying to get on to the Java-enabled chat for Computer America. So I suggested that the solution to this weather site problem was the same solution for chat. Now, Tony hasn't got back to me to let me know that the problem was solved, but by the same token, he hasn't gotten back to me to let me know that he still has a problem. So I'm optimistic that that's has solved his problem for him. And in fact, if I might add, I have written up instructions for Computer America users who have converted to Linux or are trying out Linux and have a problem getting on the Computer America chat. It does require Java, and as I've mentioned, Java is one of those restricted by license products that is not installed in Ubuntu by default. So I've written out instructions specific to Ubuntu, but also generic enough that I think they would apply to other distributions as well. And we'll include a link in the show notes, but the article is available at the Going Linux site at goinglinux.com/articles. And then the /addonchat.html. AddonChat, of course, is the name of the chat client that Computer America uses.
Yes, that's correct.
We're going to have to put that on the. We don't have that on our site permanently. We should have a permanent link to that.
What? Okay,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and I've included a snip URL as well, snipurl.com/cachat-linux. And that takes you to the same article, so you can use that.
We really appreciate that, and I know our listeners will too, because we often get that question from Linux users. Between 6 and 12 weeks, there'll be that Linux user coming in saying, "Hey, I can't get in the chat room.
Yeah, I can't get into the chat." Yeah, so this will give us something that we can point them to that gives them some specific instructions. instructions as to what they need to install and how to install it and how to get up and running on add-on chat on Computer America.
Yeah, it's a terrific chat room. I was just talking to the chat room's creator a couple of weeks ago, about last week actually, I think. And so, but it's one of the nicest chat clients that I have seen, and it's just so easy to use, easy to install. You know, all you need is your Java-based browser. Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
And I do know it works in the Linux environment, so there you go.
It sure does.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm on there right now and watching all the comments and discussions and sometimes heated discussions flying by.
Well, that's the fun of the chat room. That's where we invite people to go in there and check it out because we do have it's nice. We have a lot of regulars that go in there as well as opposed to irregulars. it's just another wonderful way, because Computer America really is a multimedia experience. You know, you have the chat rooms and you have the emails and you have the phone calls and you have the voicemails, and the chat room just adds another really interesting live element to the program. So if you have a chance, go over there and check it out. I know, Larry, you're in there as well. We have you as our guest. You have the green avatar, so people know that you're our guest tonight. The red ones, of course, are us, and then the blue ones are the people come in and participate and have fun.
Yeah, the other way you can identify me is that my handle on there is Going Linux Larry. I mean, it's kind of hard to miss.
It is kind of hard to miss. Yeah, right, exactly. Easy to identify.
Yeah.
All right, so I know we got sidetracked a little bit, but we got to talking about the reboot and the Hibernate and then, of course, all the different things there. And now you went over to the emails. So
yeah.
Where do we stand now?
I have another one that I included here. It's a little bit of a long email. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I've edited out a bunch of it. But I've included it because I'd like your input on here. It's from Will from Indy, which is Indianapolis. Indy, not India.
Mm-hmm.
And Will tends to write long emails, so I've edited down, hey, this is only a two-hour show. He is... a regular contributor or a regular listener to Going Linux, and he writes, "Enjoyed your last Computer America. The references to the past contretemps with testy French-Canadian Linux advocate, most amusing. Quite a humorous episode," he says, and continues, "A discussion of antivirus and malware seems needlessly circular these days. Did you know that it is possible to run Windows XP/Vista with almost total 99.5% certainty of blocking any sort of malware injection? This is something many technicians and anti-malware vendors do not want to hear. That 0.5% danger zone is due to careless or social engineering slips. The careless slipshod attitude of online businesses and banks towards insider network security and ID theft is something end users have little control over. This can happen to Linux and Apple users as well as PC owners. I do not do my banking online. That takes me closer to 99.9% theft and malware proof." He goes on and on, but not to really try to cut him short, but he talks a lot about what his measures are to keep himself safe. The ending paragraph is this. He says, "Since Larry still uses Windows, I'd like him to address this question with people like Craig and Kerry." They refuse to even acknowledge that there are, these are fighting words here, folks, that there are easy ways to prevent malware. What do you think of support and repair techs who refuse to speak of these simple, transparent, easy methods of totally blocking malware intrusion? What is this mentality? Do they assume all their fellow employees, associates, customers, and listeners are too stupid to apply these simple methods? If there is a conflict of interest, or is it just laziness and incompetence? End of rant, he says. So what do you think, guys? Is this antivirus and malware thing just something that folks could completely insulate themselves from by changing their behavior?
Well, look, you know, as working as a PC technician, there gets to be a point where you just realize you're beating a dead horse.
Yeah.
the clients that I deal with, and I've in my years of experience as a technician, we're talking, you know, well over 500 regular clients, and who knows how many, you know, onesie twosies that I get here and there, are very much not interested. They're just not interested. They just want the computer to work. You could say if we educate people about how their engine works, they can make their cars last longer.
Sure.
What do people say? I don't want to know that. I just want to get in the car. I want to go.
Mm-hmm. That's what they say. It's an appliance. Yes.
Yeah. And the PC has become an appliance, yeah.
And the people who are very, you know, they're nerds. We call them nerds. People are really into computers, like myself. I don't have problems with spyware or viruses. I don't have those problems. But people... Some people don't use the computer 8 hours a day either. They use it, you know. Anyway, we'll talk about this a little bit more when we return. More Computer America coming right up.
This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy, our guest for both hours, talking about Linux. And even in the chat room, we're talking about, you know, the fact that so many people these days are thinking of their computers really as a an appliance. I mean, all they want to do is turn it on and it works, just like Carrie. You put the key in the car, you turn it. They don't want to be mechanics, you know?
I don't know if it's even that. I mean, let's take this another step. You tell somebody if you would lose some weight, you'll live longer, but they continue to shovel the Oreo cookies down their throat. You tell somebody if you quit smoking, it's a proven fact. It's better for your body to not smoke, and yet they continue to smoke and not even attempt to give it up. If you talk about making backups, how many times do we talk about making backups and then how and it's so easy to do with a service like Carbonite, and how many times do we get phone calls from people saying, I lost my data? You know, people don't care about things until it happens to them. They don't care about avoiding spyware until they're infected. And then after they're infected, they care about it until it's clean. And then they're usually a little more careful for a little while, and then they get back into their groove. You know, after I had my surgery a number of years ago and I lost a lot of weight in the hospital, the doctor said, don't worry, you'll gain it all back. So I was like, hey, this is a great weight loss plan. Oh, no, or you're going to put it all back on. That's just you get back into your groove of things, you get back to your comfort zone, and that's the way it is. And some people
– behavior.
Some people think the computer's beyond them. And this is not a measure of saying our listeners or the people are stupid. It has nothing to do with it. These are conscientious decisions that are being made for the level of priority or importance that's in that person's life. That cigarette holds a priority over all else. They're going to have that cigarette. If that bottle of liquor that they keep drinking night after night after night holds a priority more so than other aspects of their life, there's nothing we can say to change that. And they're adults. They can make up their own mind. And how much arrogance do you have to not install any spyware or any anti-malware? Because I'll tell you something, ignorance is bliss. And without anti-spyware and without antivirus, how do you know you're infected?
Yeah, that's true. And your computer starts acting up.
Yeah, they don't
right.
manifest themselves.
But good viruses, good rootkits, won't let you know that you're infected. So how else would you know? So
yes,
to suggest that you could block it all, well, yes, you know what? If you're a nerd and you're interested in this particular topic and you know that much about a computer, you're absolutely right. But the majority of computer users don't want to be nerds. They don't want to. They have no interest. Right. They would much rather go watch TV and watch football and socialize with their friends and, you know, that play solitaire on the computer. That's what they want to do. But there are people out there who love learning. There are people who never go out of school. There are people who just, you know, take classes because it's fun. Mm-hmm. And there are people who are like, oh, I got to go to school. Oh, geez, see, this is torture. It's all attitude is all I'm saying. And we can't change people's attitude.
Hey, good
so
thought.
Not a conspiracy.
Good thought for the end of the show. Larry, again, we've got the website, the link to the Going Linux podcast. It's always a pleasure having you here on the show. We'll see you next month, okay, for more Linux goodness. All right.
And I'll be here.
All right. You take care now.
Thanks,
Larry. Hey. Bye. Coming up tomorrow night, it's Wednesday Madness.
Oh, I can already sense it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. I think we're going to have our Malware Madness is scheduled to be on tomorrow night with Alex Eckleberry from Sunbolt Software.
Maybe we should ask that same question to Alex when he comes on tomorrow night.
I think it's a great idea. And then Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz, Mad Magazine's Maddest Writer. He's going to join us in hour two with all the cool technology goodies that he digs up for us on the Computer America Show. So that wraps it up. So until tomorrow night, This is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.